show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
Kansas City baseball fans eat baseball.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. This is a confusing show for myself, Jeff Herr, and Michael Engel, because I think we were pretty revved up until about 2 days ago to come on this show, be angry again, because we had bought in the last show. We were back on the bus, and the Royals were driving us, and we were real happy with this. And then the last week happened, and they suck again. So it's pretty par for the course for the Royals, and we were real mad, and we were going to come on and be all fired up and stuff, and then yesterday they had to go and make the right move, and we're going to start the show off talking about this move. Gio is up, Frenchie is gone. Now what, Michael Engel?
Oh boy, it was almost too good to be true. I mean, in one fell swoop, it was pretty much Dayton Moore's ode to the internet, because Jeff Francoeur, who, you know, for everything, you know, you beat him up a lot. In 2011, he was really good, so we'll give him credit for that. The arm has always been there, so that's fine. But 2012, 2013, he's been really bad. I mean, he's been one of the worst everyday players in all of baseball. And, you know, there was enough, I think, that could have suggested that he should have been gone a long time ago. You know, obviously, the logistics of baseball and Dayton Moore's own, you know, personal approach to things, you know, he's kept Jeff Francoeur around. But the Royals, you know, they lose yesterday, kind of stinks for everybody. You know, Wade Davis gets lit up, nobody's feeling great, and then they go and they turn around, and there it is, Jeff Francoeur designated for assignment, and at the same time they call up Johnny Giovitella and basically promise him regular duty at second base. So it's like the kind of move that people have been calling for 3 months. They finally go and do it, and so, you know, it's pretty exciting for me. You know, I hate to take joy in somebody losing their job, but, you know, let's face it, Jeff Francoeur has made a lot of money. Dayton Moore has paid Jeff Francoeur a lot of money, and he's not going to be hurting anytime soon just because he's been cut from the team.
Not to mention you have the fact that if nobody picks him up, which I don't know why somebody would. I mean, I guess he hits left-handers decently well. So if there's somebody who's in desperate need for a platoon right-handed,
yeah,
slow-moving right fielder, then maybe somebody will pick him up. But point being, if he doesn't get picked up, the Royals still paying him the rest of his salary. He didn't have to do anything. So
right.
That's the glory of guaranteed contracts in baseball. But It was an astoundingly un-Royals-like move in that it actually made sense, where you bring your young ball player who's, you know, he's had middling to not very much success in his time in the pros, but he's also had very inconsistent playing time and just not basically given that kind of full chance, at least not in the way that Moose has, or in the way that Hosmer has, or even in the way that Dave Lowe has the last month. And so now it appears the Royals are finally going to do that for Johnny Giovitella, and I'm actually excited to see, you know, when he knows that it's his position, he's got a little bit more comfort. I mean, I think I wasn't able to watch the game today because I was out looking for
apps and
stuff, but, I mean,
good game.
I think you saw today, for those that watched, and I was following on my phone, I mean, he had a pretty good game. He had a pretty good day at the plate, and so did David Lowe, for that matter. And, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's an exciting move, and because the more young players that the Royals can control that are brought up and can contribute, this window that people are talking about, the wider and further open that window goes, and the longer it can stay open. So, you know, hopefully it'll work out for Gio this time. You know, Frenchie as a person, it kind of sucks. You never want to see anybody lose a job. I've been there. It stinks. But same respect, he's going to get his $3 million, whether it's the Royals paying him or not, and he's made quite a bit of money. So I'm not feeling too bad for Jeff Francoeur right now because he just wasn't cutting it, and that's just the facts of – that's just the way it goes. So it was definitely weird, though, to see Dayton Moore just kind of – he's always been a guy that falls in love with these intangibles, probably for the reason that, you know, no one can tell him he's wrong. You know, he can say Jeff Francoeur is a great guy and has a great clubhouse presence, and unless literally everybody in the clubhouse signs a petition saying that they want Francoeur out, you know, there's no way to prove that wrong. So for him to kind of basically say, hey, you know, this isn't working anymore, and we're going to try and we're going to change this and do something about it, it's kind of refreshing. We'll see if it works out.
Well, and then today I didn't get to see the game either. I'm going to probably watch it later.
No, man, watch it. I mean, it was a joy to watch because, I mean, you've got this idea, you know, Gio, a lot of people have been on Gio's side for a long time, especially, you know, Twitter folks, a lot of internet people, bloggers, you know, it's definitely preaching to the choir when we talk him up. But, I mean, it's a guy who's got better minor league numbers over his career than Mike Moustakas, and yet he doesn't get the same kind of attention or even opportunity. Today was his 100th career game in the major leagues. And there are plenty of people out there who have already written him off and said that he hasn't gotten his opportunity. And he really hasn't. I mean, he's got less than 400 career plate appearances over now 2+ years. So this is a good opportunity to really see what he can do. So yeah, go watch the game. It was, you know, you got a lot of people that were rooting for him, and he goes and he does something right away. His first at bat gets a hit, second at bat gets a hit, third at bat gets a hit, then he grounds out. So, you know, he can't be perfect, but still, it was a lot of fun to watch. And both of those guys, they had great days.
Well, if I don't know if folks don't follow Bob Dutton on Twitter, you're not doing it right. @Royals_report, he is in fine form the last couple of days, but he was especially good today. It looks like he's got a couple of articles up on KansasCity.com and some of the highlights that he posted on Twitter was David Lowe ties a Royals record with 4 extra base hits and 9-8 victory over the Twins, and Johnny Giovitella has a hit, 3 of them, in his return to the Royals. You take those two headlines and you just kind of envision in your mind, you know, Gio and Lowe just kind of looking up at the box area where Dayton Moore might be sitting and just giving, you know, an imaginary middle finger, because it was really like in one game they both just kind of said, you know, this is what you've been keeping Francoeur here for, and this is what you've been keeping Chris Getz here, and now look, you know. And so hopefully it can continue, but let's be real about it too. Johnny Giovitella has a shot,
right?
And if he doesn't prove it between now and the end of the season, he's done. Like, not just a little bit done, but he'll be done with the Royals.
He'll pretty much never have an opportunity to be a regular with this team again. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I mean, he's still got to go do it. I mean, I can concede the point that there's very good opportunity he's not going to be a regular. I mean, he's small. There are just physical limitations that he may not be able to overcome. We've seen in the past where he's changed his approach from, you know, being a guy who can take a walk in the minors but hasn't translated that to the majors. And then, you know, there's the idea of how much power is he going to have, because, again, he is pretty small. Plus, they're going to be playing half the time at Kauffman Stadium. So, you know, that combined with his, you know, it's been a questionable glove. It does, you know, give the opportunity that, hey, he's not a guarantee to do anything in this spot. But, you know, you still, I think, have to give him the opportunity. And if he doesn't do it this time, then, you know, yeah, you're looking at a guy who's probably just going to be a bench player. But, you know, he gets one more shot, and we'll see what he does with it.
I was just going through some notes here for the show, and I'm a horrible mailbag person today. I forgot to respond to Steve P. I won't give out his last name. He sent an email into Kansas City Baseball Vault@gmail.com, which does entitle him to $10 to Kelly's. If Steve, if you're listening, shoot us an email back and with your address, and I'll get that out to you.
I feel like that'll be a short promotion once people figure it out. It's like, yeah, I just got to send an email and get $10 of booze?
It has to be a question good enough for us to read on the air.
Which are going to get to, and I'm going to email this guy back. He emailed me this 10 days ago, and he said he was going to the ballpark next week. So I'm pretty sure I'm late in my response, but I'm going to type this out to him while I'm talking to you guys. That's why I kind of jumped subjects here real quick. But Steve emailed in, and he asked, "Hey, guys, love listening to your show." And we thank you for that, Steve, because I'm glad somebody is. "I'm heading to Kauffman Stadium next week, and I'm wondering what the sales signals are like at the ballpark. Are you able to check your Facebook and Twitter feeds of the games? Thanks, guys." Which I sent out to you two plus David Lesky. And Jeff responded with, "I've noticed that the cell service has been much improved. They've added a signal booster at the park for the All-Star game, and since then it's been pretty easy opening Twitter, Facebook, tweeting, and uploading pics. It can be spotty, but it's decent and much better than Arrowhead, which is a phone signal wasteland." And Lesky responded with, "I had a big problem on my old phone, but since I got the iPhone, it's way better. I'm sure it's just that it's a new phone, but yeah, I have no problem getting a signal anymore." So we thank Steve for the email, which I'm going to write him back and say, "Sorry for the late reply. You probably already were at the K. I suck."
I'm imagining the Apple
sprawling.
The Apple text-to-speech voice that you just said, Troy.
Right.
Like, sorry for the late reply.
I suck. I'm just gonna have to.
That was more like Stephen Hawking.
That's basically the same program.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Except for Stephen Hawking doesn't suck at anything. That wasn't intended that way either.
Probably not. What? What way? No.
I don't know. I thought you took it a dirty way for a second there. But
no, I was just thinking he's probably not very good at basketball.
Oh, probably not. I think this conversation could go very wrong very quickly, so I'm going to walk away.
Well, let's take a minute to remember Jeff Francoeur and Bacon Tuesdays. And stealing popcorn from fans while chasing foul balls.
I mean, he was definitely entertaining.
You know, I mean, you can't. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it just takes one team to decide that they want to pick him up. You know, it looked like he was pretty much toast in New York. He kind of hit a little bit there. Goes to Texas. They used him properly in a platoon situation. He hit a little bit there. You know, he started back up with the Royals. New opportunity. He had a great 2011. Maybe it's just the matter of the wake up call that he's going to a new organization that gets him jump started to actually like look at what he does poorly and to improve upon it. And it, you know, maybe there's a team that goes out there and they need a right handed bat with a little bit of pop, and you know, they go ahead and try to get him, and you know, see what happens over the next 4 months of the season. You know, it's not out of the question. I guess next 3 months of the season. So, you know, I think he'll probably get caught on somewhere. I don't think this is the last anybody's seen of Francoeur. It's just the last you've seen of him as a Royal, which is, you know, favorable. You know, now they get an opportunity to put the best lineup out on the field. You know, you can reward David Lowe for the great play that he's given. You get a chance to see what Giovitelli can do while second base has pretty much been a black hole. You know, you get Mike Moustakas is kind of creeping back up there. His average is north of 200, and it's, you know, it's almost into the 220s, which is still crappy, but it's a lot better than he was a month ago.
Didn't we do the same game with Eric Hosmer last year in the batting around 215, 220 for a long time, and
yeah,
if he was going to make it over 200 or whatever?
Yeah, we did, and, you know, it's kind of sucks to play that game, but it's whatever positive you can get out of it. I mean, the Royals clearly at a certain point decided that they were not going to option him to Omaha. You know, they could have done that in early May, you know, really not lost anything on their record in that month and already had him back and feasibly fixed. But, you know, this is kind of what we're working with now, where Moustakas is still here. He's starting to hit a little bit. You know, it's still something that can go south just as easily. I mean, he had 4 homers over like a 10-day stretch in the middle of May, and you know, turned right around. It was right back, and maybe even worse. You know, showing worse body language and all that. But once they brought George Brett in, it was pretty clear they weren't going to, you know, just give Moose 2 weeks to work with him and then give up on him. You know, so they're going to stick with him. But you also see what, you know, Eric Hosmer's done this month. He's had an awesome June and is now tied for the team lead in homers, which, you know, that's not a huge accomplishment because they've only hit, like, 49 of them this year. But still, you know, he went from one homer through April and May and had six homers in June. So, you know, he's kind of coming around to what you want and what you expect from him.
To interject there, Mike, yeah. He's hit 308, 354, 529 is his slash line in June for Hosmer.
Yeah. I mean, that's all right. You get these guys and they're hitting. You get to put, you know, what feasibly is your best lineup out on the field. You know, you can go with these guys pretty much all the time. They'll probably rotate Draw Dyson in with David Lowe and Lorenzo Cain and just kind of see what happens with those guys. But, yeah, I think it's interesting. And then you get the opportunity to use Miguel Tejada and Elliot Johnson in roles that are a lot more conducive to what their actual skill level is, you know, as utility guys, as substitutions rather than everyday players. You know, you saw Elliot Johnson with regular duty really get exposed, you know, really didn't look very good at all day in and day out. He's probably going to be a lot better as just the guy you plug in. You maybe give him two starts a week to fill in, give a day off, you know, maybe late inning sub as a pinch runner, defensive sub. And that's a lot better for him. You know, it's getting him, it's kind of like Willie Bloomquist a few years ago, where if you give him 400 plate appearances in a year, something went wrong somewhere. But if you get him 150, that's not too bad. You can kind of, you know, limit the damage that he'll do with the bat, and maybe even, you know, he'll do better in that limited time than he would over a full stretch. So, you know, I think these moves are good things, and hopefully they really kind of jumpstart everything because, you know, the Royals' offense still really isn't hitting that well. So, you know, getting some energy up there, that's a good thing in my book.
The Diamondbacks just called and they said playing Willie Bloomquist every day is not a bad thing. He didn't play every day. I guess I can't say that, but he's had some decent stats with them.
That's so weird.
it might be weird, but it's the fact of the matter. What's your favorite stat, Mike? What stat set do you use that really kind of show how good a player is?
Well, I mean, there's really not any one great one. I mean, wins above replacement is probably the best at trying to gauge everything, you know, base running, defense, and hitting all in one.
Well, I guess this kind of supports your point. In 2011, he was 33 years old, first year with the Diamondbacks. He played 97 games with them, and he had a WAR, an O WAR, whatever that means on Baseball Prospectus.
Offensive WAR.
Okay, of -0.1 and a defensive WAR of 0.3.
So he's been above replacement level.
So he was a plug and play guy. In 2012, at age 34, he was a 0.8 offensively, but a -0.8 defensively. I don't know what's happened to his defense.
How old did you say he was?
Oh, that's a good point. He was 34. Yeah. And he played 80 games. Now, this year, how many games have we played so far this year? As of Sunday, the 30th of June?
It's the midway point. The Royals are, 78? Something like that?
78 games? Okay, so he's only played 22 games this year, 79 plate appearances, and has an offensive WAR of 0.2 and a defensive WAR of -0.1. So, again, he's pretty much a zero player. And that's, if you look through these, that's pretty close to his career numbers. I guess his best year, depending on if you want to put the emphasis on offense or defense, would have been at age 30 in Seattle. He was a 0.9 offensive WAR, 0.4 defensive WAR, both positive. And that was one of few years that he actually was both positive. So he only played with Kansas City for 2 years. It seemed much longer than that. Anyways.
It always seems much longer when they're crappy players like Kyle Davies or... So Davies was around for a long time.
Do you know what he's done in his last 30 years that the Royals haven't? He played in a postseason game.
Great.
He played, you know, with Arizona in the NLDS at age 33 in 2011. So
wait, Davies or Bloomquist?
Bloomquist. Oh, I don't care about Davies. I don't read about him. He makes my head hurt just thinking about the fact that he was on this team that long. So
okay, yeah, well, Bloomquist, good for him. I mean,
yeah, but and, you know, Willie's a good guy too. But I totally think Frank Gore is going to end up on Arizona somehow. I don't know how, because they have like 12 good outfielders in their system right now.
That's how he's going to end up there. He just kind of does that. Comes in, steps it up. By the way, Will Myers, I think, has 3 homers already.
On that subject, I was waiting on a gentleman today, and he had a shirt that said Tampa Rays on it. And so I was talking a little baseball with him. They were from, he was originally from Flagstaff, but now they called Tampa home, and they were back for whatever reason.
Oh, that's got to be rough.
Enjoying the lack of humidity here in Flag versus that weather town in Florida. But I told him how I do this Royals podcast, and one of my guys just has a love affair with the Rays, so we follow the Rays pretty closely, and he goes, yeah, you guys got our best pitcher. I said, yeah, you guys got our best player. And he laughed, and you know, I don't know if Will Myers is, but he definitely looks more and more like it every day, and mm-hmm. And he tipped me well, so apparently he enjoyed the baseball conversation. So
there you go.
So there you go. Moral of the story, if they have a baseball shirt on, you can make a connection. So, but no, he definitely misses James Shields. I think that trade, it really depends on who you ask, but I think that trade really did affect both fan bases pretty roughly. James Shields is pretty beloved down in Tampa, so.
Well, he'd always spent 10 years in that organization, so, I mean, that's a significant part of that entire franchise's existence that had James Shields in it.
And Shields is also, he's that first guy that really came up and kind of put it together from the point where Friedman took over and really kind of started bringing that organization back. James Shields is one of the first guys that kind of reaped the benefits of what Andrew Friedman was able to do. And comes up, and he was. I mean, who was with him that time when they made that jump and went to the World Series? Was Matt Garza? Was he on that team?
Garza was there. Edwin Jackson was there. They had gotten Jason Bartlett. I mean, not shortstop, but you know, they made some moves and kind of gotten some good chips and had a good pitching staff around him and a really good bullpen. They had like Grant Balfour was there and. Who else was out there? A lot of just like guys who've been middle relief kind of guys all around. J.P. Howell was there, you know, one of those years. So they had a lot of really good guys, you know, supporting cast as well. And then, you know, Shields. They brought up David Price late in the year.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think everybody just assumes kind of David Price was a big piece of that team, you know, 5 years removed, but you know, I think a lot of people don't realize he wasn't called up until September, I don't believe, and then for the playoff push, really. So, I mean, James Shields is a real big piece of that team that went to the World Series.
Yeah, this is probably their kind of equivalent of trading Brett Saberhagen. Because I remember in 90, that winter in 91 when they traded, or was it 92? I think it was 92, when they traded Saberhagen. I mean, it was a gut punch. It was the worst feeling I probably had as a Royals fan to that point, because I mean they'd been good and Saberhagen was, you know, 2-time Cy Young Award winner, won the World Series, World Series MVP, homegrown, still young, and then they go and trade him, and it was just the worst day you could have probably had as a Royals fan back in the early 90s when the Royals actually were pretty good.
Well, I think that pretty well covers the Tampa Bay portion of the show.
We need to find a local establishment in Tampa and just give them a shout out just at random. Go to Jerry's, I don't know, Jerry's Fish Fry.
Jerry's Eastside Diner.
Right, on 79th and Palm or whatever streets they have down in Tampa.
You've got to have a street named Palm in Tampa Bay, right?
You should.
That sounds right.
Thanks for sponsoring the Kansas City Baseball Vault establishment in Tampa, Florida, where you're there's probably as many fans for the Rays in Kansas City as there is in St. Petersburg, because
probably
true. Most of those games, it just angers me. That's a whole different show.
Yeah.
let's jump on. Paulino has a setback. He pitches a simulated game, and his shoulder hurts, so he's back on pause. Jeff, is this guy going to pitch for the Royals this year?
I'm starting to wonder if we're ever going to see Felipe Paulino in a Royals uniform again, at least on the professional level. And I say that because one of the reasons Paulino had some issues previously before he came to the Royals and why he was so easily had by the Royals was because I believe I read some article, I think it was written by Rainey, where he had talked to somebody who basically said that Felipe Paulino's shoulder was a quote-unquote ticking time bomb. So there were always concerns about injuries, and that was one of his biggest things. He just couldn't stay healthy, couldn't stay on the field. He could put it together, at least when he was when he's been with the Royals, he could put it together, put up some fantastic numbers. But, you know, even when he was really good and he would just occasionally get setbacks, and then he had Tommy John, and now, you know, things are kind of snowballing on him here, and you don't know, for whatever issues he had previously, whether it was his shoulder or whatever it was, we don't know what his rehab has done to that and how it's affected everything. So I'd be surprised if we saw him do anything for the Royals this year, and specifically anything meaningful. So, I mean, especially when you think we're already at July now, basically, and if he has another setback, I mean, he's probably going to take a couple weeks before he gets back out there and throws, I would imagine, a week or two. So, I mean, we're talking middle of July before he could even start a new rehab assignment. And if you're going to do that, then you're basically pushing, I mean, best case scenario, he gets back early to mid-August for the Royals. And at that point, then you have to weigh the fact of, well, are we going to take a chance on Felipe Paulino coming up and try maybe working through some injuries if the Royals are in the playoff race? Or are they going to sit there and say, okay, well, Felipe Paulino, he's got some injury. Let's just put him down in Omaha, make sure he can stay healthy, and let's keep this train rolling. You know, and another wrench it kind of throws in things into is, well, what about Urban Santana? Because people, and this is something we'll get into a little bit more later, but he could be a good piece of trade bait, Urban Santana, since the Royals won't have him next year. At least they don't have the contract for him next year as of now. So Felipe Paulino is a big piece of that, because if he is ready to come back and he's healthy, I think it's easier to stomach trading away Urban Santana than if you don't have that. But, I mean, if you, just from what we know of Paulino's injury history and the way this whole rehab thing is going, it's basically been worst-case scenario. So I don't think we'll see Felipe Paulino this year, and I'd probably be surprised if he comes back healthy at some point next year, too, to be honest.
Well, I've gotten to the point where I don't think he's coming back at all. Kind of like what you were saying, Jeff. Mike, anything to add to that?
Well, yeah, I remember before the season there was all this talk about, okay, well, we got Shields, we re-signed Guthrie, we got Santana, you know, get away Davis. You know, then you kind of look at whoever's going to be the fifth guy, and then there's always that idea that people would bring up in the back that, you know, Paulino and Duffy would be coming back. And, you know, I think you're seeing, you know, his initial setback was just like a back strain, just something that they wanted to, you know, they didn't want to have him overdo it and try to compensate and things like that. They have him throw this simulated game, hurts his shoulder. And now, yeah, it's everything that Jeff said. There's always been injury concerns, and it's always tough to come back from Tommy John anyway. So you're looking at, you know, at least a year for someone to come back, and then you have to also consider how effective they're going to be. If he's having all these setbacks and all these starts and stops, you know, it's not a guarantee that he's going to be all that effective. It's always going to be something that, you know, they're going to have to monitor. You might be able to get 6 starts out of him, and even then, if it's in August, you know, are those going to be meaningful? Is it going to make a difference? You know, are the Royals going to be in it or not? You know, you just don't know. So I think it's just tough. And when you consider that right now that the Royals don't really have, you know,
Well, ladies and gentlemen, the internet demons got us again.
We had an internet outage, and when we came back up, it looked like everything was okay. We continued to record, only to find out that there is a clicking on 33 minutes of the podcast. Unfortunately, that audio is pretty hard to listen to. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut out the end of it, which is a birthday wish to our good friend, Chris Kamler. And the out to commercial there, I'm going to put in a commercial. And then we'll continue on with our around the minor leagues, which actually turned out really, really well. Unfortunately, though, we are going to lose a good portion of this audio, it looks like. What I will do, if you'd like to hear the rest of Michael Engel's opinion on where he left off and some other things we talked about, I will put this on the end, but there is a very annoying clicking that goes along with it. As always, thank you for listening. Shoot us emails at kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com, and have a great day. Now back to the program. We're going to go out to a break here and take some music with us, but on our way out to break, I would like to say a very special happy birthday to a member of our family. That would be the one, the only Chris Kamler. He's turning 29 again today. So, happy
this
birthday.
This is probably
Chris
his 20th year of 29.
Yes.
Something like that.
I heard the 20th 29.
We'll have to have him on sometime soon. He can talk about that. But here's a little Stevie Wonder happy birthday.
Quiet, I'm dancing.
I bet you are too. Somebody get mine ready and let Audra know that Engel's dancing. We'll be right back.
This is Kent Babb, and you're listening to the Royal Man Report.
People will come, Royal Man. They'll come to the Royal Man Report for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll show up via a Google search, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at our podcast as innocent as children, longing for audio. Of course we don't mind if you have a listen, you'll say. It's a free download on Stitcher Radio, or iTunes, or on Kings of Kaufman. They'll click the link without even thinking about it, for it is time they have, and baseball discussion they lack. And they'll sit in their chair, sit at their desk on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have a download all queued up and ready where they listened last week and cheered for their favorite segments. And they'll listen to the show, and it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The insight will be so thick they'll have to brush it away from their faces. People will come, Royal Man. The one constant through all the months, Royal Man, has been baseball and the Royal Man Report. Kansas City has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt, and erased again. But the Royal Man Report has marked the time. This podcast, these listeners, it's a part of our past, Royal Man. It reminds us of all that was once good and could be again. Oh, people will come, Royal Man. People will most definitely come.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. the best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
That was fun. I was dancing.
I bet you were.
I love Stevie Wonder. He's the best.
I randomly searched for happy birthday songs and that one came up and I couldn't pass it up. Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson, joined by Michael Engel and Jeff Herr. We'll see if we can get fined for using copyrighted music this week. It's always fun that way. If you've been following us for a while, you know that we've had a relationship with Podomatic. That's where we post the shows. That relationship comes to an end in September. It's also, all of a sudden, the Podomatic program has become a bit of a problem for me getting shows uploaded. So I'm going to start primarily uploading to where we will be after September, which is on royalspodcast.com. And that's the website, but poor Clint Scholes has been tied into a legal battle for his cab company in Council West, Iowa, and Omaha, Nebraska. And on the Nebraska side of things, just more reason for him to hate Nebraska. He's been tied up for, I would say, about 2 months now. He's getting that all worked out. Eventually, you'll be able to find our stuff there just like you can at kingsofkaufman.com. But most importantly, if you've missed an episode or four recently, check out soundcloud.com/royalspodcast, and I'll make sure Mike posts this somewhere that you can find the archives, because that is where the best archives are right now. And if you're getting us from iTunes, it is of the utmost importance that you look up the Royals podcast on iTunes and make sure that you're getting the one. Well, see, the problem is they both have it in there. Make sure you you have the one that has the Royals podcast, the interview with Scott Sharp, Royals Director of Player Development, because I don't think that ever went up on the other site. So make sure that that's the one, and that was from about 2 months ago. So scan back through about the last six or seven episodes and make sure that that is the one you're getting, that that's the feed you're getting, because we don't want to lose anybody when we make this change in September. But this is a much, much better move
and
for
if you
the
have,
show.
If you have any questions, just ask us. Just ask Troy AOF on Twitter, and he'll let you know.
Yeah, and if you can't get me at Michael Engel at the Jeff Report, those guys can always get back to me really quick. And
I usually won't.
Right. If you have any questions about an RSS feed because you use Zune or some sort of Google Reader type app, but by the time you're listening to this, Google Reader won't exist anymore. If you're having any sort of trouble with whatever your feed is, wherever you get it from, Dogcatcher, something other than iTunes, let me know, and I'll make sure you have the correct RSS feed as well, because it's really important to me that if you've been listening to our show, that you can continue to listen, and we love having you. But soundcloud.com/royalspodcast has the latest archives, and once our time ends with the folks over at Podomatic, who have been great. I take nothing away from Podomatic. I like those guys a lot, and they've been good business partners, but they are they're pretty expensive, and SoundCloud made a really good deal to Clint, and we jumped on that as part of that, and so we're excited to see where that's going to go. But I'm going to bring all the archives over, which Clint may or may not realize, once we're done in September. So there will be pretty much a show a day for about a month of me putting the archives up, because it'll take a long time to get done, and I've got other stuff going on in my life, like planning a wedding, so I'll move them over as fast as I can. I'll have them all backed up and everything, but it may take me a while to get them moved.
Priorities, dude.
Right. Yeah. And then maybe someday you'll have a spot on Kings of Kaufman where you can go and check out the archives.
Hey, I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
That may or may not happen. Anyways, back to the question at hand as far as we're concerned here. Let's see. We're going to do a do our around the horn with the minor leagues like we do in every episode. And we actually have quite a bit to talk about because the minor leagues have been much more exciting than the pros the last week or so. And we already talked about Danny Duffy being optioned back to Omaha and Polino and his setbacks in the minors. Mike, what else do you have at AAA?
Well, there's this guy, Yordano Ventura, who's been pitching pretty well down there for a while. He's been throwing fire, as the kids say. And as a result, he's been selected to go to New York. He's going to be in Citi Field in July during the All-Star break. He'll be taking part in his second All-Star Futures game. Of course, we saw him last year in Kansas City, where he started opposite Jake Odorizzi.
Struck out Will Myers.
It was an awesome, awesome day. I mean, that whole game was awesome. So he's going to be taking part in that. Miguel Almonte is also going to be joining him. Almonte is with Lexington in low A right now. Both of them, pitching really great. Ventura is, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to make it to the big leagues this year. It could be that September call-up. It could be something where they just kind of wait on him and for service time issues. But, he's pitching pretty well down there since he's made it, he's at least recently. He started off, he's had some rough goes of it, but, most everything is there. He's throwing the ball really well. He's getting a lot of, good strikeouts. He's, had three different outings where he gave up one run only. So that's all right. I mean, you're going to live with that. And so he's been good. Almonte has been really good as well. He kind of came on last year just out of nowhere. And I think we talked a bit about him with J.J. Piccolo and Jason Parks and J.J. Cooper. And, he's kind of one of those fast risers all season coming into it. He was somebody that they really expected to be really good. And, in 15 starts for Lexington, he's got a 3.39 ERA. He struck out 80 guys. He's been really good. And, somebody to get really excited about. And as a prospect, he's probably right up there, kind of getting into that top 10, five as far as Royals prospects right now. So that's exciting to kind of see him get some recognition for it, whereas a year ago nobody knew who he was except for, the deepest of prospect hounds. So that's pretty cool. That'll be the Royals' two representatives in the All-Star game, and, we're really happy to have him go out there.
When he gets called up, D.B. Lesky might lose his mind. I'm pretty sure he's got about as much of a crush on him as I do on Jason Adams. So it'll be interesting to see when he does get the call. And if him and Will Smith could get it figured out at the big league level, it takes a lot of pressure off Paulino and Duffy, too, if Paulino is able to come back at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see Will Smith do something. He's only 23, and it always seems like he's older than 23. Even when they got him, it didn't seem like he was as young as he actually is, because the Angels were really strange. They pushed him up the ladder really quick. He made his Triple A start, after being an A ball for just like 10 games. So they just threw him up there and just see what he would do. And then he got traded to the Royals, and it's kind of gone from there. But he's been they started to convert him to a relief in Omaha. For whatever reason, I never really saw a distinct reason given. That's kind of the kind of thing that you see a pitcher. They can add some velocity that way. They can focus on their best pitches because they're not going to have to go through a lineup two, even three times. So that might be something where, at least this year, that might be a good spot for him to fill in. And you saw it the other day. He filled in for Wade Davis. He still had a lot of length in his arm to where he could go out there and eat up some innings to fill in for Davis, who only got through one inning and change. So, I think he had a great spring. He pitched well in Omaha. He's getting an opportunity to kind of get some time in the big leagues. And I think if they needed to, they could move him right back to starter pretty quickly. It might just be a matter of optioning him to Omaha for two starts to get him worked back out and then bring him back up and fill in the spot. And, it's like I said earlier, having too many arms is a good thing. And if you're looking for a spot to put a good left-handed pitcher, the bullpen's not a bad place to stash him if, he can help your big league ball club. And he's pitched well. So, You know, he had his one start this year where he wasn't very good, and when he's been in relief, he's been pretty okay.
And then from AAA, we move on down to what has by far, in my opinion, been the most exciting in the Royals organization, and that's AA, and that's our good friends down in Northwest Arkansas. I think they're still our good friends. We don't have our direct connection down there anymore. But
right.
By the way, on the subject of Omaha, big shout-out. I don't have his name in front of me, but big shout-out to the marketing team at Omaha who sent me a couple of capes from their cape giveaway. I'm going to give one to my nephew and keep one for myself. I've got the Royals cape that they did as well, and they're actually kind of neat. I might do something with them someday, but I was pretty pleased to get the one from Omaha. So thank you very much, the Omaha Storm Chasers folks. They're pretty fantastic, and we'll probably get them on the air at some point and talk to them. But down in Northwest Arkansas, my oh my, oh my, what an amazing week that they've had down there, highlighted by a good friend of the program, Brooks Pounders, who will be on with me later this week. I've got to lock up a time, but there's a good chance that Wednesday may end up being a busy recording day for me. I got an interview for a job in the morning, but I'm going to try to set up an interview with Mike and I with JJ Piccolo that early afternoon, and then I also want to get Brooks Pounders and a couple other guys from Northwest Arkansas during their day off. May also grab Jason Adam, who also had a great start. But let's start with Brooks. No-hitter. Had never been done at Northwest Arkansas by one person. They've had combined no-hitters, which included Herrera. But they had never had one where somebody just went out there and did it. A conversation that came up behind the scenes, going behind the curtain here with us, one of the things that had come up that we were talking about is, you know, Brooks, even though he was kind of a guy that was traded for kind of a high-profile player, and so we know his name. Some people know his name for that, and if you follow Chris Kamler, you know it because Chris Kamler lost his mind. Brooks immediately became his favorite player, and everything that went on with that. And then we had him on the show, of course, and he's a good guy, and he's a pretty good baseball player. But he's never been somebody that the Royals have really talked about. He's been kind of just mixed into the field, you know. And we were kind of talking behind the scenes about, you know, why is it that you never hear about a guy like Brooks Pounders and he makes it to AA, and guys that are high profile guys are still at the A level and not being pushed. And maybe that's because they don't care if a guy like Brooks Pounders gets blown up in AA. But what does it do when a guy like Brooks Pounders goes out and throws a no hitter?
Well, it draws a lot of attention for one. I mean, you know, any no-hitter, no matter what the level it is, I mean, that's pretty impressive. You look at, you know, even a couple of years ago when Luis Mendoza went out to Omaha and, you know, he threw that no-hitter that, you know, they changed it eventually the next day on a scoring decision. But, you know, he basically threw a no-hitter. And it was, you know, right there the year where he was the PCL Pitcher of the Year and everything. And, you know, he kind of carried that success onward to where, you know, he's now a really effective major league starter. Just, you know, confuses the crap out of me, but he's doing it, so credit to him. Pounders is kind of the same way. You know, he's still fairly young, but he's never really been a huge prospect. He's always been kind of one of those fringy guys, you know, a guy that you can fill out a minor league roster, you know, probably rely on a lot more. I don't think if he struggled, they would be looking to cut him. But there are some guys that they just kind of can recognize at a certain point, well, this guy's probably not going to be moving up the ladder anytime soon. Pounders, at least, is kind of that guy who could be, you know, a swing man, you know, maybe a number five starter, maybe a late inning guy. You know, there's a lot of versatility there. He's worked in relief. He's worked as a starter this year. And so then he comes out and he throws this no hitter, and it was almost a perfect game. I mean, he didn't walk anybody either. He hit a guy, and there was an error, but that was it. You know, struck out six, no hits, no runs. That's, you look at that, and of course they're going to take a second look. It's double A. It's not, you know, messing around in the rookie leagues. And double A is the real deal. And so I think it improves his standings. I mean, his overall numbers don't look great, but he's been okay, and he's somebody who, you know, slowly but surely, he's going to end up in Omaha. at some point, I'm sure, and might be a kind of guy if they need to just fill out a bullpen at some point due to injuries or whatever, you know, maybe next year or the year after. Yeah, he's maybe a guy who's on that list of potential call-ups for that purpose. So, you know, but at the same time, it's like you said, I think Jeff may have said it in the email thread, where it's like you bring him up and you put him in Double-A, and if he gets hit hard, you know, you're not shattering a guy's confidence that, you know, you really expect to be there in the top of your prospect lists. You know, he's kind of out there, chews up the innings, gets you through it, and whatever he gives you is a bonus. So I think that's kind of what niche he fills out.
And Jeff, go ahead. I was going to say, if you feel like jumping in on any of this, just please do. I kind of haven't thrown anything to you, but go ahead and jump in.
Well, all I was going to say is I think when it comes to a no-hitter, especially at the minor league level, it's always hard to say, even at the major league level, how much a no-hitter really means. But I do think what it does is it establishes a sort of kind of baseline talent level, if you will, because, I mean, to be able to Purdue, I mean, I don't care what level it is, but especially at a level, you know, Double-A, Triple-A, or the majors, like you said, Mikey, I mean, that's the real deal. Those people that will be hitting, playing in the major leagues are in Double-A. You know, you can't necessarily, there's a lot more in Double-A than you usually see it in, like, the high A, you know, high A leagues or low A even. So, but I think it shows that there's a base level talent that someone like a Brooks Pounders has that he's going to be able to contribute to the major league level. Is he going to be a starter or a Pedro Martinez out there throwing, you know, probably not, but he is somebody who, like you said, if they need to fill out a bullpen role or maybe they need a spot start here or there, you know, he is that kind of a guy that can probably go in and, you know, there's value to that from an organizational standpoint. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily something where you look at it and say, oh, you know, he's our guy. He's the next, you know, Mike Montgomery that's supposed to save the organization. You know, he's not that kind of a player. But all the same, I think it does show that there's more than enough there to show that he can contribute at some point on some level to the major league team.
Yeah, and last year he had a 7-inning game where he was no-hitting a team in A-ball for 7 innings before it was finally broken up. So, I mean, it's not like this is out of nowhere. He's kind of done it a little bit in other spots. So, you know, I think it's a good story, too. I mean, he's a good guy. He's a, you know, big guy when you look at him. He's listed at 6'4", 270. Actually, he doesn't really look it in photos, but, you know, still pretty big guy. But, you know, no-hitter, complete game no-hitter, even better. I mean, it's impressive no matter, you know, what level you're doing it if it's in pro ball.
Well, and the thing is, I'm listed at 6'4", 272, but his 6'4", 270 is a much better looking than my 6'4", 270. So he's definitely spent a little more time in the weight room than I have. But I'm been real impressed with Brooks, and he is a friend of the program and somebody that I can text and tell him, you know, good job. But can you imagine waking up the next day and now he's just a no-name minor leaguer for the Royals. You know, he's not in a big organization like the Yankees or the Angels or the Dodgers or somebody like that where you would have thousands upon thousands of followers. Although I think the Royals are probably more devoted to the Royals fans are more devoted to the minor leaguers than a lot of other organizations out there because we're so dependent. Yeah. Because we're so dependent on it. But can you imagine getting up the next day and going back through your Twitter mentions and seeing all the people talking about it and all the congratulations and the text messages that would come from it? I mean, how good, I mean, you can't feel bad for days, like until your next start, at least you would have to be on cloud nine because it would just feel so good to have that kind of feeling coming out of a game like that.
Yeah, it's got to be an awesome feeling to have. I mean, that's something that, I mean, I coach little leaguers and, you know, we play 6 innings and there is one game where we were going through and, you know, we were actually about to run rule a team. I mean, we were up by like 10 runs. So it was 4th inning or 5th inning or something. And we had the same pitcher the whole time and he hadn't allowed a base runner yet. And so he's in the dugout the inning before and thinking about, what do I do if I do this? What if I And, you know, just like, just go do it. But, I mean, even at that level, you know, these are 12-year-olds. You think about that kind of stuff. I mean, you do it on a video game, you start thinking about it, you know? I mean, so to do it in real life and then actually see people interact and talk to you and send you messages and things like that, it's got to be amazing as a professional athlete to go out and do that and get that response.
And then, of course, at AA, our good friend, as the guys call him, my boyfriend, Jason Adam, he didn't go out and throw a no-hitter yesterday on the 29th, but he definitely looked good. Now, I don't know what it is about Jason, and thank God that win-loss is not an important stat at any level, but especially not in the minor leagues, but nobody likes to win for this guy. He's 3-6 this year with an ERA just north of 3, but yesterday he comes out with a no decision. Started the game, 7 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 run, it's earned, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts, absolutely dominated the defense, I forget who they played.
That might be the problem, that's why he's not getting the wins, he's dominating his defense.
The defense. But you know, if you look back at his game last year, he never got wins in
single A either. No, he got no run support last year, he hasn't gotten a lot this year. He started off really bad this year. The 3-6, 3.03, that's in his last 10 games, which is really good. I mean, considering, you know, his first 5 games were really bad, and it really skews everything. His, you know, the first 20 innings he pitched this year were pretty rough. So, but he's been really...
Oh, wow, I didn't notice that he had started so many games. You're right, I was just looking at that last 10. He's 3-8 with a 5.44 ERA.
But you look at his last 10 starts, I mean, he's given up 28 runs and 21 of those earned in his last 10. So in the first 5, he's given up 29 earned runs. You know, I mean, that's crazy. That's a lot of runs. And that's just, you know, that's the transition to Double A sometimes. And, you know, you look at everything else, he looks a lot better. And so... Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that longer stretch of 10 games where he's been much more successful. He's made 5 innings every start. He's had a couple of really good high strikeout games, a lot of really low walks. That's been his calling card, you know, as long as he's been a pro. He doesn't walk a lot of people. And, you know, somebody like Jason Adam, big kid, smart kid, you know, highly regarded, hit 95, good secondary stuff. You know, if you've got a guy like that who can keep the ball on the ground, that he's got a good chance to be really, really good starting pitcher. He's, you know, or at least contribute regularly at the major league level. So that's pretty exciting, especially considering that he is a good friend of the show.
And he will be on again. I know we're wanting to wrap this show up because the guys have stuff to do, and I actually have another podcast to do that was supposed to start a half hour ago, but we've had some audio problems, and I think the show itself is going to be pretty long, but it was actually a good week of baseball. But, you know, Jason's very active on Twitter at Jason_Adam9, and I was giving him a bunch of crap about not being on Twitter, or we were talking. It was not after this last start, but the one before that, which had also been a good start. I was just kind of talking about him, and a guy from here in Arizona picked up the conversation. Apparently, he's been following Jason too. Now, why a guy in Arizona, other than he saw him, you know, down at in the off season or whatever? Because Jason's here all the time. He is more devoted to the game than any player that we've ever talked to, that we've ever talked about. He spends more time in Arizona training than anybody in the Royals organization. He owns a house in Surprise just so he can train year round. He is completely devoted to this game. And you know, me and this other guy were talking to him the other day, and he was talking about, you know, needing to pick his Twitter game up and whatever. And it's like, don't worry about that. Go out and pitch well, you know, become a major leaguer, because that's what people really want from him. And he's well on his way, man. When he gets to Omaha and he's that one step away, it every week it's going to be just giddy on this show waiting for that start. And we'll have him on right after he makes it. And I feel more this year like he's that close. You know, he looks like a Royals pitcher at this point.
Maybe that's not a good thing.
I mean, he looks like James Shields the way he gets wins. So I guess there's that. So, no, I mean, he looks like somebody that could pitch for the Royals. No, that's not a good way to put it either. He looks like a major league pitcher at this point. He really looks like somebody that could pitch at the highest level, and the last 10 games have been a real good sign for him. And we, of course, continue to hope that that he continues to do well, because we want to see him in the major leagues. Mike, why don't you go ahead and take us through anything else real quick and wrap us up?
Well, it's been a rough year for Kyle Zimmer. He just really hasn't had a lot of success in Wilmington, but last night through a seven-inning complete game shutout. It was part of a doubleheader. Two-hitter, struck out six, walked two. So that's his best outing of the year by far. That's very much what you want to see out of a former first-round pick. And you know, hopefully that's the kind of thing that gets him back on track. He's just really been fighting it this year. I mean, the control's not bad. The strikeouts are up there. It's just been a lot of hits. And, you know, to an extent, you can kind of see some of that just with the minor league defense behind him. But at the same time, you know, he's pitching in a pitcher's league, in a pitcher's park. And you want to see a little better than the 5.4 ERA that he's doing. But, you know, again, this is the kind of thing, maybe he's coming around. He's somebody who was inexperienced as a pitcher. You know, he's only pitched the last 2 years of college before he was drafted. So, you know, as a full-time pitcher at least. So there's probably a lot of the things that he needs to kind of figure out at the professional level that maybe he didn't run into. So he's kind of going off a lot on his talent and his stuff, and not so much on some of the situational stuff. You know, I haven't really seen him, so that's just kind of my guess. But that's it makes sense to me that way, at least. But, you know, at least in this one game, seven innings, complete game no or complete game shutout. So that's positive. It's a lot better than doing complete opposite.
Yeah, and it's good to see him finally getting something going. Jeff, did you have anything to add to that?
Not a ton. It is a little disconcerting, and I think Mike, you pretty much put it best that he's kind of been battling. So hopefully he'll get it on track, because I think a lot of the plans for the Royals' near future involve Kyle Zimmer. So he needs to get it back on track to really feel good about things, because I think a lot of the reasons why the Royals were okay with the James Shields trade, you know, with James Shields only having 2 years left on his contract, because they thought that Kyle Zimmer would be pretty much ready to go by the start of, I guess that'd be the 2015 season. So, I mean, he's not necessarily off track for that at this point, but he needs to keep improving and get better to get there. So hopefully he will.
And staying with Jeff, any closing thoughts?
This Royals team, it's kind of funny, because the DFAing Jeff Francoeur and bringing up Johnny Giovitella was the right move. It's the one they should have made a long time ago, and that's just it. It's the Royals, and it's a move. It just might have come 2 months too late, hell, a year too late if you ask some people. So the team, they just continue to frustrate. You know, you get all these positives and then all these negatives, and it's this year especially, it seems like it's been worse almost, because in previous years it was just all negatives almost, so, and the positives were few and far between. So I guess it's a good sign there have been more this year, but we're going to keep riding out this train, I guess, and hopefully the positives start to outweigh the negatives and they can get back in this thing and make it a race here for some meaningful September baseball here in Kansas City.
Mike?
I think I'm just going to watch Eric Hosmer's June highlights the rest of the night and just let that be my solace.
Because that's all we got right now is highlights, instead of grabbing onto something and hoping that this team can make a run at it.
Well, they're only three games under. Stranger things have happened, but they've got to do it. They got to get it going. So it remains to be seen if they can actually do it.
Just if you haven't, as I said when we came back from break, if you haven't, make sure you're updating your feeds. If you have any questions, get at any of us on Twitter at TroyAOF, at Michael Engel, or at the Jeff Report. If you're feeling a little frisky and thinking of having a drink, you can also follow Friggin' Engel for all your alcoholic comedy.
And if you are feeling such, you should go to Kelly's and indulge.
And if you if you're going to Kelly's, or if you haven't been, a great time to go would be to mark in your calendar. It's still a few months away, but haven't locked down the date for sure, but it's going to be somewhere between October 5th and 8th. I will be back in town. We will do a Kansas City Baseball Vault meetup. There will be a lot of drinking going on. It'll also be a celebration of my 29th birthday for the third time. And and we'll be going from there. So mark that on your calendar.
The first 3 years of 29 are the hardest, so you're past that, Troy.
I guess so. I'm getting old. I know that. I feel old. I freaking tore a tendon in my thumb accidentally bumping it into a wall. My body's breaking down
You're brittle.
So I am. I'm having my problems. But until next week, I am Troy Olson. They are Michael Engel and Jeff Herr. We are the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We thank you for listening. Send us your emails at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com or get us at us on Twitter at @KCBaseballVault. The email address, I'm sorry, is KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. On Twitter at @KCBaseballVault. Find us on Facebook. Get all three of us on Twitter. Send us your thoughts. We'll get them on the air. Thank you, as always, to everybody that does send us stuff. If I didn't get to it, I'm sorry. You might need a resending for me and Mighty got married. I try very hard to keep it all in order, but sometimes I fail. Until next week, for the Kansas City Baseball Vault, have a great weekend. Go Royals.
What you trying to be yourself for?
I'll just say something, wrap it up.
Yeah.
You can piece it together however.
All right, okay, here we go. In 5, 4, and welcome back in from that unplanned break there. My internet sucks. You know, there aren't very many things in this world that I think the government should control, but I do think they need their hands into the cable industry, because first it was Time Warner out there in Kansas City, and now CenturyLink here in Flag. They both equally suck, so.
There we go.
Right. I'm pretty sure neither of those two companies were going to be sponsoring us anytime soon. Anyways.
Thank God we got Jays in Tampa.
Right. This show is so awesome. Mike, why don't you just go ahead? You were bringing your thought together when that cut out if Polino's going to matter.
You know, and I don't know, because it's just one of those things where you run into the guy that you've got to keep track of them all the time, and they may just decide to shut him down at a certain point. So you look at that Tommy John surgery, you know, recurrence of injuries, the makeup of the roster as it is, and where they might be when he's actually ready. Yeah, it's a less than 50% chance that he does anything. So we'll have to see. Hopefully he can get back out there, because it's better to have more arms than you need than, you know, going out and trying to find them. But it's sketchy at this point.
Meanwhile, the gnarliest baseball player of them all, and as Bob Denton said, the best ball player on Twitter, Danny Duffy, has been put back onto the 40-man roster and optioned to Omaha while he finishes his rehab. He was out of rehab time. He only get 30 days as a pitcher, 20 as a position player once they technically start their rehab. So he is on his way back to the big leagues. Things starting to look up for him. He had a few bad starts in Northwest Arkansas, but apparently the Royals saw what they wanted. They sent him on to Omaha, and I think he was starting today. I didn't see the details from it or anything yet, but are we excited about Danny Duffy yet, Mike? Mike?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. It's the same questions with Paulino, except for you don't have, you know, a history of other injuries. You know, the elbow seems fine. He's finally kind of gotten his command back to where he's not walking a lot of people.
Keep going, though. What? Keep going. It's going to drop, but keep going until it does.
Okay. But over his last two starts, you know, he's thrown 10.2 innings. He's only given up 5 hits. He's only walked 3 and struck out 11 in that time. So it's kind of coming back for him. It's kind of the same deal, though. They've got to have a spot for him. And, again, you can't necessarily guarantee that he's going to be able to jump in there and get major league hitters out right away. If they're in the thick of it, they're probably going to leave him in Omaha, just because they don't know exactly what they're going to get out of him.
But are they going to be in the thick of it? I mean, is there really any chance that the Royals are a contender this year?
I mean, there's a chance. They're going to have to hit a heck of a lot more. Jeremy Guthrie is going to have to be a lot better than he has been most of the last month. Wade Davis is going to have to rebound from a really crappy start that I'm glad I missed because I was doing stuff for work on a Saturday, which is like, it never happens. But, I was kind of spared a really crappy Wade Davis start where he got 3 outs on 69 pitches, which I guess is a record for most pitches to get 3 outs. And, it's not really one that you want to have. So if they still, you know, if Guthrie keeps regressing, giving up, you know, plus all of his base runners score, gives up homers, walks people more, that's going to hurt. If Wade Davis melts down, you know, that's going to hurt. And with an offense like what the Royals have had through 3 months of the season, yeah, it's pretty iffy considering that they're already in third place, 3 games under .500, and chasing the Indians and the Tigers. So are they going to be in the thick of it? I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to hit, and they have to pretty much start right now to do that, to get anywhere close to contention like they had hoped that they would be in 2013.
Yeah, and, you know, I think they're definitely going to have to hit. And, I mean, it's going to be, you know, Billy Butler and Alex Gordon kind of. Gordon obviously had the incredibly hot start. I mean, he's tailed off quite a bit. But he's shown, you know, he'll show a couple, 2-3 games where, you know, he'll look like he did earlier in the season. And Butler will have a 2-3 game stretch where he looked like he did last year. And they're going to have to turn it on and put it together for an extended period of time. Eric Hosmer is going to have to show the last 2 weeks or so that he's had is for real. And he's getting back to that 2011 form and Mike Moustakas and the whole, you know, that all has to improve. And then that's not even guaranteed because then the pitching, as good as it has been, you know, what was one of the big things people kept saying is that it's unsustainable, you know, and not that I think they've sustained it for quite a bit longer than anybody thought. So there's no reason why they couldn't continue and, you know, sustain it for the rest of the season. But it's baseball and I wouldn't bet on that. So, you know, the odds of the hitting all improving and the pitching kind of keeping the status quo, staying where it is or getting even better, the odds of all that happening are slimmer. So, I don't know if they'll make it interesting, but I don't know if they'll be in contention necessarily, you know, but interesting for Royals fans is about 500. But then again, I mean, that'll keep you in the race through most of August. So, I mean, it'll still be fun, but I don't know that when it comes back to, you know, Duffy's ready to go, is he going to be the make or break kind of guy? Which I don't know that he'll be that.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what direction they go because I want to see him make it. I mean, he's so much fun. He's been really good to us, and he'll be on with us again at some point. But I'm just kind of giving him some space right now to get his stuff together. He's really, really focused. I mean, he is really, really focused. So I appreciate that and kind of leaving him to do his own thing.
Let Gnar be Gnar.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta let it, you just gotta let the freak leg fly. Staying out with the Major League team, we did talk about Santana as a trade chip kind of a little bit there doing the Paulino stuff, and I honestly think you have to trade Santana this year, and honestly, if you could get, you know, halfway decent pennies on the dollar for Shields, I'm not so sure you don't trade him either. Because, I mean, you definitely won't have, I don't see any way that you have Santana after this year unless you overpay him quite a bit. And Shields is gone after next year. And if you could make a killing with those two and really get everything right offensively that you need, it might be worth doing. Granted, they gave away what we needed offensively for Elliot Johnson, who has not been, you know, who's been underwhelming, you could say. And Wade Davis, who's been right near awful, he's walking the Kyle Davies, Lou Kochaver line. But I don't think they'll wait as long to throw his butt back in the bullpen where he probably belongs. And then you have, you know, Santana, who has been a nice surprise. So, you know, what do you do with Santana if you're the GM, Jeff?
I mean, if I'm the GM,
This is always a horrible question to ask me, because as much as I like to criticize Dayton Moore, which I think is deserved on his part, but I'd probably be a horrible GM, because anytime you would have a situation like this, I would be in favor of pulling the trigger for the trade, because, and it's hard to say now as a fan, because when you're in it as the GM, you know, your two jobs as a GM, basically, well, two main focuses, I should say, are making this team win as many games as possible and being as competitive as possible in each game and keeping an eye on the future. You know, so it's tough to get to that point where you say, it's tough to be realistic as a GM, I think, even though you need to be, but it's tough to get to that point where you say, okay, this season, you know, if absolutely everything went right, we might be able to stretch it into the playoffs if we really got hot or whatever, but it's probably not going to happen. We're probably a 500 team, so let's trade Urban Santana, see if we can't flip him for a solid prospect or two and make this team better 2014, 2015. You know, that is really tough, and I definitely appreciate the situation that someone like Dayton Moore would be in coming to that, because this is an exciting, as bad as this sounds, this is as exciting as this team has been in a while, not just because of their record, but because they truly have, even when they've been just horrible, they've been in just about every game, and they really, you don't feel like, oh no, Jonathan Sanchez is pitching, or Luke Kochever is pitching, it's a lost cause, this game's over. You know, you just don't ever feel that this season so far. And it's hard for Dayton Moore to be in that position and pull the trigger, but if I'm the GM, I'd be realistic from this team from the start and kind of know what it is. And so I would probably flip Santana for, I don't know what's out there that you could get from a prospect standpoint. I mean, I think you have a couple of options. You either get maybe two lower level guys, one with a decently high upside and the other is just kind of average, or you might get kind of an average starter who's in AAA, maybe a little bit closer to the pros, because I don't think that you get, you know, you're not going out and getting a Matt Minor type or a Matt Harvey type or something for 2 months of her. That's just not going to happen. So it's a tough little while. You try and balance keeping it together and rolling with what's gotten them here, which, granted, isn't that great. There's still 3 games under 500. But if it's me, I make the trade.
I don't know. I don't know what I would do, because right now you look at a lot of teams that are within striking distance in their divisions, and there's quite a lot. I mean, you look at even as far as the AL West, even the Dodgers at 37-43, they're still within 5 games of their division. You know, and that's, you know, every team in July is always going to be looking for starting pitching. Urban Santana is one of the best out there that could be available. I mean, if the Royals have a really good July, like, in the next 3 weeks, and they come through, and let's say they win, I don't know how many games they play over the next 3 weeks, but if they win like 15 out of 21 or something, you know, and they kind of really get back to where they're way over 500, if they've got any kind of shot, if they're within like half a game of Detroit or half a game of whoever's in first, then that's a spot where it's kind of tough to trade him, especially for prospects. You would almost have to be trading him to get, you know, a big bat that you can plug the end of like right field. You know, but if they go through that point and they're, you know, only if they're 9-10 or 9-12 or 10-11 or whatever, well, you're sitting there at a point where you're still under 500, or you're hovering right at 500 or in that area. You know, and then it's a lot tougher to justify holding on to the guy when he's gonna be a free agent. There's always the possibility that things snap back and he starts regressing. And that's kind of the point where you trade him. As far as what's out there, I think the real popular one that people have kind of picked out is, you know, looking at the Padres, who are, they're 40-41 coming into today. They're 2.5 games behind the Diamondbacks, but they've got a lot of different outfield types. They have a lot of infield guys who could be expendable. And the big kind of deal that people have talked about
as a potential move is Santana for Kyle Blanks, who's a huge guy. He's like 6'6 or something. He's a pretty formidable prospect a few years ago, never really got it together. This year, he's starting to kind of show some of those signs of being a guy who can hit with some power and play reasonable defense, in the outfield. And so that's kind of the kind of move that I think they'd be looking for. It's just really tough to go trade for James Shields, give up your top prospect, and then turn around within, 7 months and say that, okay, well, we're going to basically try to trade this guy to rebuild. If they can get something, if they can get a guy who's really close to the big league or big league caliber, that would be a good idea because you get him, maybe they throw in some prospects that have some potential. Then you're kind of looking at something where you're not really taking too much away from the present, but you're still building to the future. I think it'd be a nice guy to send out to, like, Cincinnati had a spot, Pittsburgh. You know, look at some of the divisions where it's really tight, where there's a lot of teams that need to stay afloat. And that's kind of where it is. I mean, you're always going to find market for pitching. And with the way Santana's pitched, I mean, he had another great month of June, and it's been 3 straight months, just really good performance. So if they can get something for him, yeah, they got to go and pull the trigger. If they're just selling him out for, a handful of guys just to move them because they know they're not going to keep them, I don't think that's that productive. It's kind of tough, though. I mean, what they don't want to do is get to the end of the year and have to make the decision on if they're going to give them a qualifying offer. Because that's going to be like $14.5 million for 1 year. I think that's going to be getting into paying way too much for them. I mean, $13 million in salary this year, or 12, which is what they're paying him. That's still pretty high up there. He's been worth every penny so far. Next year, is that going to be the same, or is it just going to even out over a longer timeline? And that's where it kind of gets scary. So I think if I had to put odds on it, I'd say it's like 70-30 that they'll trade him. Still with me?
I am, Troy.
You know, I got a quick plan for mute button. I don't like for people to be able to hear me breathe, but I keep thinking I turn it back off and I don't. So it's gonna be an interesting show. I was saying
soccer. We're not professionals,
right? And my internet's not completely cooperating, so I do apologize for that. But if it's me, I trade him, and I trade him fast because I think you can get a lot. Like you were saying, there's a lot of people still in it. Unfortunately for me, a guy that really wants to see a playoff game, a lot of it seems to be in the NL West, where it's a division where nobody wants to win the division. Honestly, so is the AL Central. I mean, the Tigers really haven't come out and said, this is our division, like you would think they would, like they should, but they haven't. So, I mean, I don't know how much you can take away from that right now. There's still a lot of baseball left, and I'm going to be saying that until after the All-Star break, and then I'll start in the – if you're going to make a move, you got to do it now. But, I mean, there's a lot of baseball left.
It's a good time to make a move now while you still have more teams who think they're going to be in it. You know, it's the same kind of deal where if the Royals play 3 weeks and realize they're out of it on July 21st, well, there's going to be a lot of other teams that realize that they're out of it at that point, too, and they're not going to go trading anything of significance for a guy that's just going to pitch, for 10 weeks on their team. You want to find a team now that's why I kind of like Pittsburgh, because they've been notable to fade, in July. But if they get another pitcher, maybe that's something they can work off of. And they've got, some prospects down there. They've got some guys who could fill in and maybe, help replenish the upper levels of the farm system, or maybe even be big league contributors. And, that it could be interesting. It could be interesting to go after them. Or you look at a team like the Nationals, who have been struggling, and Dan Heron's hurt now, and they're just going to get Bryce Harper back pretty soon. Go for a team like that that's going to need a good arm to kind of get back into it and make up some ground. Right now, there's a lot more teams to go out and sell to. In 2 weeks, there might not be nearly as many. It gives you less options to work with.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it San Diego that traded Fieri to the Angels, like, about this time, if not earlier?
because they realized they weren't going to compete a year or so ago, and they made a pretty good cleaning for a relief pitcher. Imagine what you could get with a quality starter like Santana.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be, you know, there's not a lot of guys who are kind of in the same position where they're going to be free agents next year and who are pitching well. So I think that's a good, you know, it's a good problem to have. If they keep him, he's probably going to pitch okay, if not very good. If they trade him, they can probably get something because, you know, he could be the most marketable guy out there. It'd be like Santana, Garza, Ricky Nolasco's out there. That's kind of it. You know, Nolasco hasn't been very good. Garza's had some health issues. Santana has been good and he's been healthy. And that probably makes him more attractive for a lot of players, for a lot of teams.
And then other players that we've been watching here this month that really need to start doing something or are going to, or maybe go the way of, well, they won't go the way of Jeff Francoeur, but something needs to happen is, two different guys, Alex Gordon, who has been pretty impressive, and then all of a sudden Eric Hosmer is hitting bombs. Jeff, what's your takeaway on the Junes for these two guys?
Well, I think Gordon, what I noticed with Gordon early in the season was that he was so hot and making so much contact, and, you know, it was, they were all going for hits, that I think he kind of got this sense of just being able to hit everything. And I noticed his walk numbers, specifically his walk rate, was lowest it had been in his career by far. I think his career rate is like in the 9 to 10% range. And
he was in the 7.
Yeah, and I think for the first month of the season, it was like 4% or something. So he's really low for him. And I think that kind of caught up to him. And he lost a little bit of his patience. And now, these last few weeks, I think I've noticed him getting it back. I mean, what, he had 3 walks today?
Yeah.
And he's that kind of guy that'll have that type of game. And once he, that's his game. That's where he is the 2011, 2012 really successful Alex Gordon, not when he's up there, obviously. I mean, I think everybody, this is true, but that's kind of how Gordon found his success, is when he stopped swinging for the fences and doing just swinging at everything and really made the pitcher pitch to him. Once I think he kind of wrapped his head around that and started getting that, that's when he really turned it on and had the great 2011 and became, you know, a legitimate star in this league. And I think Hosmer, I've kind of noticed that this year. And one of the reasons why I wasn't as worried about Hosmer as I was Moustakas this season is because you could see, I mean, Hosmer's approach was always, I think, a little bit more advanced than Moustakas' was, but you could definitely see that this year. And, you know, he is getting to that similar point where seems like he's making the pitcher pitched to him more than he's just trying to hit what the pitcher gives him, which, you know, I mean, it gets kind of nebulous territory where whether you can actually determine how much of a skill that is and how much that can be taught and you know, different things like that. But for whatever that's worth, I think Hosmer does have that kind of a skill, and he always had it coming up. And I think he got away from that last year. He had that such successful rookie year, so I think he just wanted to, you know, hit a lot of home runs and be that guy, that superstar, you know, home run derby type guy. And even though he has the potential to hit a lot of home runs, I still don't know that he's the Prince Fielder type or the Mark Trumbo type where he's just gonna hit tons of bombs. You know, I think he's kind of a gap, more of, you know, like an extra base hit to home run hitters. So he's not, I think when he kind of realized that he's more like an Alex Gordon than he is than someone like that, that he, making the pitch to him, and I think it's an absolutely great sign. And because of that, his confidence started to come back, and then you're in a situation where you look at some of those swings he's given on those home runs, and man, it's a good
man.
Swing now. It looked off last year. Beginning of the season, it looked normal. And then when things just kept going bad, he started pressing and really got away from it. Earlier this season, I mean, Scobie online, Kevin Scobie would put he had like a couple of videos or GIFs or whatever of Hosmer's swing comparing 2011 to now and how different it was, and it's getting a lot closer now to where it was in 2011. And he is putting some of that controlled violence back into his swing, and it's really paying off. And with he had 3 home runs in the last 4 games or something, so it's definitely a good sign. I'm excited for that. I think we're really starting to see the hitters kind of wake up a little bit, and this whole, you know, approach that the Royals have said they're taking, where they want to emphasize plate approach and patience and, you know, walking more and all that kind of stuff. And I think that they might actually be for real this time, because you start to see it. And I don't know how much of it is the Royals finally embracing it and how much of it might be the players just saying, you know what, I'm just going to ignore this and go with what works. But whatever, you start to see little inklings of it, and you're seeing it in the bigger players like Gordon Hosmer, and I think it's a positive for me, and I'm hoping that it can only continue and get better.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're at a point where we can look at Alex Gordon struggling in a month and not panic, because he's done so well over the last 2 years. Yeah, I was looking at that June and his performance, and a lot of it, this month has been a really low batting average on balls in play, and we talked about that a lot. And we've talked about Gordon and Babbitt and the possibility of sustaining it. And it's, you know, one of those things, you know, in 2011 he had just a crazy batting average on balls in play. It was way up there. Didn't look sustainable at all. And then the next year he did basically the exact thing. He was 1 point off of his Babbitt from 2011 in 2012. And he was doing that with Gold Glove defense. He was doing that with some power. He had 50 doubles last year. He hit 20 some homers in 2011. You know, plus he was walking better than the major league average, who's, you know, he and Billy Butler are the only two players who were doing that. And so this year, you know, he kind of started out with the same thing, you know, high batting average on balls in play. And then in June, it dove down. It was in the 300s for the first 2 months, and then it dropped into, you know, high 190s and into the 200s, to where he was hitting the ball, but one out of every 5 balls that he was putting in play was falling for a hit, which is way below what, you know, most players in the league will do when you average them out. And, you know, the funny thing about it is he was hitting a higher percentage of line drives in the month of June as well. And so it was, in some cases, a lot of bad luck. Some of it, I think, was just, you know, bad timing, bad, you know, pitch selection, maybe a little bit of, antsiness. You know, I was looking a little deeper, just looking at changeups, because it looked like he was particularly bad on those. And you look at, I have these graphs in an article on Kings of Kauffman, where you look at his first 2 months and his approach, you know, he's swinging at stuff that's kind of inside, stuff he can drive, stuff that's up out of, over the plate. You know, not really chasing a lot of stuff down and away. And then you look at June, and there's a big old red spot down and away against lefties and against righties in June. And it looked like a very different kind of approach. And I think what it really looked like is a lot of pitchers were throwing changeups down and away to him. He wasn't hitting them very well. And, you know, you get soft contact, you either floated out the left or you ground out. And that's kind of what it looked like. It looked like he was doing a lot of that, and that's a big part of the struggle. He seems to be seeing the ball better. Like just said, he had 3 walks today, and, you know, he didn't look surprised or panicked or anything. He drilled the ball really deep to center for a sacrifice fly, and I think if the wind wasn't blowing in, and, you know, it got to the warning track, it had a really good shot of getting out. So I think he's going to come back and even better. I don't really have to hope for it. I just kind of know it's going to happen, because he's shown over the last 2 years that he's, you know, a lot more stable of a player than what we had seen in maybe 2008. You know, if he had this kind of month in 2008, it'd be a whole different story. You're completely worried about him, because he'd already be coming off of the bad season in 2007. And so you start to worry about what's going to happen. But now that he's got some success, it's a lot different story. With Hosmer, I mean, this has been a great month. I mean, he's hit really well. He's had one stretch where he went about 1-for-17. And I think he got out of that by hitting 2 homers in one game. And then, one of them, they've been absolute bombs. I mean, he hit that homer in Kansas City off of, left-hander Hector Santiago and drilled it 455 feet. I mean, that's the longest ball hit by any Royal this year. So it was a complete bomb. Every other homer except for maybe two has been, 400 feet or more. So that's going to get you pretty far. You know, some of the things, his 2 homers against Warzak in Minnesota, the first one was just this curveball that's coming down and in on him, and he just ripped it. Like, just completely ripped it, hands all the way through. You know, I bet if I could be in his shoes, it's one of those swings where you don't even feel the ball hit the bat, because it's that smooth of a swing. And then later, he takes a high fastball and drills it over the center field fence, and that's a ball, you know, a month ago, he's popping up in the left. And so that's really encouraging to see him come up there and have that success. And even better, it's not just homers. He's been hitting good doubles. He's been pulling the ball more. He's been driving it with power. And his hands are just a lot quicker than they were in the first 2 months of the year. And if he keeps that up, you know, he's got a really real chance to lead the team in homers. He's got an outside chance at, you know, hitting 20. He hit 6 this month. If he had 6 next month, and then into August, you know, I mean, there you are. You're getting right onto it. So that's really encouraging, to see Eric Hosmer come out and do that. And I think it's something that looks sustainable to me. I mean, he's hit pretty well all year. He's had pretty good plate approach most of the year. It's just kind of been a matter of getting his bat speed to cooperate with him. And now that it is, you know, I'm really excited to see it.
Well, I'm a little more cautious on the whole thing with these guys, but Moose seems to be getting it, and Hosmer's getting it, and I have no doubt that Gordon will get it back. And so it'd be nice if they could get it all together, preferably on a James Shields start. And
that they did that. They gave him 4 homers.
And
he knew
still
what the heck to
the
do
win.
With himself.
Right.
Oh, he got the win. He got the win. It's his first win since April 30th, but he got it.
Was that, when was that? I'm so behind. I've been working so much last week.
Yesterday.
Okay.
Or no, yeah, yesterday, Friday. It's Friday.
I haven't watched baseball hardly at all this weekend, so I've just been checking the scores. Whereas the other day I posted on Facebook and Twitter that it was the game that they lost in 10 about a week or so ago, and I swore at the TV and swore something about the Royals, and Megan, who's sitting in the living room, my fiance goes, "I thought you were going to watch less baseball so you'd be less angry." And I said, "Yeah, like that's actually going to happen."
Yeah, it's a sickness.
So I can't do that. I just don't know what to do with myself when it comes to this silly team. They get me all wrapped up and crazy. So, alrighty, guys. Thank you.
Like 9-hour show.
Yeah, it's going to be good and long.
About average.
That is for sure.
That's what she said.
This bit alone was 1:10. That other piece was 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long show.
So this is, we're definitely channeling our inner Pine Tar Press podcast.
That was good stuff, though.
Is that a good thing?
I think so. Anyways.
All right, let's get it.